E1, number 28A.
So he begins, you could see, to illustrate that truth in its counterfeit sense as that what people think is true. But Jesus comes along and says, but I say unto you, and he gives them a completely different concept of God, and therefore can say to the elders and the scribes, you are just thinking in mortal terms, in a human system of reference, and therefore all your calculations are blind, the blind leading the blind. He gives them the bread of the divine calculus. In the Bible, the bread was standing really for the idea of truth. The calculus, the leaven that leavens everything. And so we get here quite a few incidents all about bread. Naturally, one has to understand the symbolism of that time in order to see at once that he is speaking about the truth. He says, that which goes into the mouth does not defile the man. Whereas out of the heart proceedeth evil thoughts. He could see that what is going on in people's minds and hearts are really the false calculations, false reckonings, and that make up the mortal. Whereas then comes the woman of Canaan begging Jesus. But the woman said to Jesus, but even the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from their master's table. See, she began to see something about the calculus and could see that the calculus would consist of ideas, the crumbs that fall from the master's tables. That if she would get the crumbs, the ideas, that little by little she could feed herself and would see the truth. So she was just begging to see first the ideas of God, the ideas of mind and spirit and soul, and could see that that alone would be already sufficient to sustain herself. So he said to her, O woman, great is thy faith. And right afterwards you have the feeding of the 4,000 with seven breads. With seven bread. Can you see? Right from that point, all those 4,000 were feeding on those crumbs, and through feeding on those crumbs, thousands and thousands of crumbs, you can see that builds up the calculus of man. We usually first start with these crumbs, with ideas, with the atomistic sense of the synonymous terms. But we know that if we start with the atomistic sense, we get a good grounding, we get the bundle of data, and afterwards it's just a matter of putting them together into a good loaf of bread, into a whole model of consciousness which would give us abundance of life. And so he was warning right afterwards, when he had given those bread to the 4,000, he was warning his disciple against the leaven of the Pharisees. He had given them the right leaven. That leaven had leavened the whole lump and therefore gave the new paradigm of truth. And so he warned them against the old paradigm of the Pharisees. Therefore that bread which was built on human conception, opinions, and therefore said, these Pharisees, they ask for a sign of the times, and they ask for a sign, and Jesus said, well, they cannot see the sign of the times. You see, what he was saying there was what we were saying a few hours ago, or whenever it was during this week, that we said the new paradigm cannot answer the question of the old paradigm. The old paradigm of the Pharisees said, give me an answer to this and this problem, give me a better one. And Jesus said, nothing doing, I'm not going to do that. And said, you cannot even see the signs of the times, the new paradigm. And therefore you are blind, you Pharisees, because you cannot think in terms of the new paradigm, of that Christ consciousness which Jesus presented. And so it is today, we see that with the new paradigm of a structured consciousness and presenting science as a structure of being and presenting it through the structural laws, that these signs of the time cannot be grasped by those who are in the old way of looking at Christian science atomistically, are engaged in arguments and treating on the basis of arguments, keeping up thousands and thousands of statements on top of each other, just heaping up atomistic facts. They cannot see, they cannot understand us. We don't need to be discouraged that they cannot understand us. They also have eyes, but they can't see. They also have ears, but they can't hear. We need a new standpoint, and then we see, the blind see, and the deaf hear. Having shown in this way, really, the new paradigm of truth, then he asked his disciples, who is the Son of Man? Now he was challenging them at this point and said, can you see the new paradigm? Can you see who I am? Up to this point he has never said that he was the Christ. And so we get all these answers from the false reckoning, from the false calculus. Namely, that they said, some say you are John the Baptist, others said you are Elias, some reckon that you would be Jeremiah. You see, there was all that false reckoning, just guessing, guesswork of truth. And they just couldn't see the signs of the time until Peter would say, thou art the Christ, the Son of what? Of the living God. You have life impelling the truth. Life impelling consciousness to see and to establish in consciousness the new paradigm that man is the Christ. It's a terrific story if one can read through the illustration and to the symbolism of that time, which is naturally not the symbolism of our time. But you can see what happened here. We have the subject of truth or manhood, and life impelled consciousness to exchange, so to say, the old sense of manhood for what? For accepting being as a calculus of idea. In order to do that, he had to use those symbols which were common at that age, namely the thinking of the elders of the Old Testament, the Pharisees, the scribes, and the elders have said, and in the tradition of the elders, the blind leading the blind, saying, they don't know. They are in the old paradigm of thinking that brain which can think makes that difference between an animal and man, namely, thinking makes man. He said, that's not true. That's the blind leading the blind. And he could see that the woman of Canaan who was begging for just the crumbs, that she got the idea, that she was starting to get the new paradigm, and could see she was impelled, though He was impelled to gather the crumbs, to gather the ideas. And when he began to see that he was gathering the ideas, he was ready to say, all right, I give to the 4,000 the bread, the whole bread, the whole structure of truth. All the crumbs together structured as one whole, and gave them the bread. And as he was given the bread, he was warning them against the bread and the leaven of the Pharisees, and says, don't go back, don't try to prove with your new bread the questions of the Pharisees. They don't know the signs of the time. They ask for signs, but I'm not going to give them, because the Son of God will show them something completely different. Instead of showing to the Pharisees that he is a worldly king, he's going to show them that the mortal has to go, that he will be crucified, and that the mortal is not the mortal, but that he will ascend. That will be the sign of the time, that man is idea. And as this was approaching and approaching really to the point of crystallization, then he asked, do you know who I am? And again, the extraposition of the old paradigm, you are John the Baptist, you are Elijah, you are Jeremiah. They were calculating humanly in the old paradigm who he could be, until with Peter break through the new paradigm, the signs of the time, and said, you are the Christ. And what is the Christ? Not a man. He's the Son of the living principle. He's the presentation, representation of a living principle, the calculus of idea. One can see in that story how it took really a development in consciousness until really one could accept the new paradigm of the Christ man. Yes. Then we come to the next point, to truth from the standpoint of absolute Christian Science. Truth, the factual truth. And I have summarized it like this, that the Christ truth, which is that divine, infinite calculus, that true leaven, that the Christ truth has dominion over the human, the mortal calculus, and thus translates the human back into the divine. Can you see here the office of the Christ truth from the point of view of absolute Christian Science? That Christ truth here is now exchanging the mortal calculus for the divine calculus. Up to here we only had the impulsion to bring forth the establishment of the new paradigm, that there is a new paradigm, namely the divine infinite calculus, the Christ. And now we have a few incidents that show how truth, the factual, is therefore taking or how in that truth the divine calculus is dominating the mortal calculus. It starts there with that incident where Jesus foretells his death and his resurrection. That was his new sign of the time. He said, I give you a sign of the time, but that will be the sign of the time of Jonah, that he will be buried and then resurrected. But Peter didn't like that new paradigm. So he tried to keep him back. And so Jesus said, "Get thee behind me, Satan." I wonder what a student of mine would do if I would tell him that, if he ever would talk to me again. Peter did. He must have been a wonderful man, Peter. He made all the mistakes you can make, and yet he made all the big steps as somebody can make. It was something like Paul, who really was persecuting the Christian, but once he has seen the light, he did a mighty good job. They are not lukewarm. These people are wonderful people. They can make big mistakes and they can make big strides. But then afterwards only the big strides they have made count. The rest doesn't count anymore. So he said, "Get thee behind me, Satan. They shall see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." You can see how now Jesus forecast that in place of the mortal calculus would come the divine calculus. Instead of trying to save a mortal, he was saying that there will come something which is much bigger than the mortal, namely the Son of Man, the Son of God in his kingdom. And so Jesus was showing them a foretaste of what is coming on the Mount of Transfiguration, and was showing them that new calculus against the old calculus. Because you know how he went up, Jesus, Peter and John, and how Peter said, "Let's have three tabernacles, one for Moses, Elijah, and one for Jesus." And Jesus didn't agree and said, no, because a voice out of heaven said, "This is my beloved Son." See, they had such difficulty in getting out of the old ruts. They always wanted to have the old also in the new. They always wanted to have the new wine in the old bottles. And so it is today, we always would like to take all the old paradigm admirers into the new paradigm. We can't. There is only one tabernacle. Once you have seen a new paradigm, there is only one tabernacle, which says, "This is my beloved paradigm." And you jolly well just have one and not two, the old and the new. "This is my beloved Son." And he asked, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And the answer was, "Whosoever shall humble himself." See, what is the greatest in heaven? The divine infinite calculus. And the one who humbles himself, who lays down the false calculus, the material calculus, the human calculus, that calculus of material thinking, of human thinking, of human reckoning, if that can be laid down, then that would be true humility, because it would mean to accept the new one. And so he says about the shepherd who has 100 sheep and one goes astray, the Son of Man will go and take back that one that has gone astray, because the Son of Man is come to save that which was lost. Giving a great sense that what was lost is really that the idea always existed in truth. And that has gone lost. We think that we have to build up and build up through accumulation and addition, the whole bundle of data. And he could see that truth exists since time immemorial and that nothing can get lost. So the Son of Man is come to save that was lost and ask to forgive 70 times 7. Always to see, no matter what the false calculus is presenting to you, always stick to the new paradigm. Don't let yourself be influenced by the arguments and the calculus of the old paradigm. It actually doesn't matter to anything. Stick to the new, go along with the new, don't try to reconcile the old with the new. Just keep your eye on the ball, on the new paradigm. So, in these symbols you can see how Matthew went a step further than in life. He goes to truth and shows that once we have touched the Christ consciousness, that Christ consciousness as a new paradigm will take more and more and more the place of the old paradigm in our consciousness. Yes. Then we come to love. And this is a big subject here, because it gives this all-embracing sense. I have written down here as an epitome, in the all-embracing love, the divine calculus resolves the mortal calculus completely. Can you see those three stages which we had in the sixth subject? From the point of view of life, life impels first the establishment or the bringing forth of a new paradigm of the calculus, the divine infinite calculus. Then truth comes and says, this calculus is factual, therefore must take the place of the old paradigm. And love comes and says, this new calculus, the divine infinite calculus, will finally resolve the old calculus, the mortal calculus, so that only the divine calculus will be existing. And in order to do that, he takes quite a lot of experiences out of Jesus' life and orders them. And I wouldn't be surprised if he had ordered that most important part of showing that man is a divine infinite calculus that resolves completely the mortal calculus, if he hadn't shown them through the four levels of science. You have here in my notes four statements under this epitome with four dashes in front of it. And I think the first is showing that whole idea from the point of view of science, and the second from the point of view of divine science, and the third from the point of view of absolute Christian science, and the last one from the point of view of Christian science. From the point of view of science itself, I think he wants to show that this new calculus, the divine infinite calculus, that this calculus is indivisible. That being operates indivisible as a calculus of ideas. I think that's what he wants to show. Therefore, you know what we had on the level of science itself. We said on the level of science itself, it's the infinite one, the indivisible one. Therefore, there is no error. And here he also shows that all mortal concepts are therefore not existing, must be laid down. He shows that through a very tangible symbolism, namely of the rich young man. He wanted to have that indivisible being. He wanted to have that kingdom. And he tried to get it, and to get it, and to get it, and somehow he couldn't quite get it. Because he was asking, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? He thought he could really earn his way to heaven. He wanted to do good things. But in the indivisible being, this is not the way. In the indivisible being, there is only one way, namely the state of consciousness, which accepts nothing else, no other element, no other constituents of being, but being itself. So Jesus said to him, "Go and sell that thou hast and give it to the poor." That was too much. And so he went away. He never got that kingdom. He never got eternal life, eternal being. Just so that being is an isness which we can't earn and work up to it, and that in order to have it, you have to sell everything else. You have to get rid of every other consciousness, every other calculus, except but that calculus of being. And if we try to cling to another calculus, to material things, we can't get it. In order to show that being is indivisible here, again, the level of science itself, he gives that example of the parable of the laborers in the vineyard, how they came in at the first and third and sixth and ninth and eleventh hour, and that when they could get their wages, then it was the same wages what was given to all of them. It's indivisible. Being is indivisible. You can't earn your way to perfection. Those who came to the first hour had worked a lot, and those at the third hour have worked also, and those at the sixth and ninth hour also quite a lot. And he who came on the 11th hour just worked 1 hour. But they all got the same. Being is indivisible. That's the tone of grace that came in, about which then Paul was preaching and teaching, that the Christ attitude is the attitude of grace and not of works. And here Matthew showed, once you touch the calculus of infinity, the mortal calculus doesn't count anymore. No matter how often you have been calculating wrongly, the moment you touch the right calculus, the wrong calculations are nothing, are dissolved. Can you see the complete dissolution of the wrong calculus once you touch the right calculus? This is the epitome of love here, huh? That the divine calculus really dissolves completely, or resolves completely, the mortal calculus.